tune in this time next week to Urban Indigenous Radio.
CKUT 90.3 FM, Montreal.
Vaccination against COVID-19 is ongoing throughout Quebec. The combined effect of two doses ensures better efficacy of the vaccine, reducing the risk of getting and transmitting the virus. You'll also stay protected for a longer period of time. Coming to your appointment for the second dose of the vaccine is a must, whatever else is on your schedule. The second dose of vaccine is essential. A message from the Gouvernement du Québec.
The Association des Services de Réhabilitation Sociale du Québec is filing a class action suit. If you were strip searched between July 13, 2006 and July 1, 2011, if you were in one of the following facilities, Bordeaux, Rivière-des-Prairies, Roberval, Saint-Jérôme, or the male sector of Quebec City, you may be able to be part of this claim. For complete details, go to asrsq.ca/class action. That's asrsq.ca/class action. Claims must be filed before January 16th, 2022.
What's up, good people? To those of you listening, wherever, whenever, whatever time it is, good morning, good evening, and good night. You are locked into another Tuesday evening with Soul Perspectives right here on CKUT 90.3 FM. Soul P has been on the air since 1994. We bring you all the topics, the guests, the ups and downs, the highs and the lows of the black community here in Montreal, across Canada, and internationally. We have a beautiful evening of music and discussion lined up for you tonight. Keep it locked. You are listening to Soul Perspectives right here on CKUT 90.3 on your FM dial.
Free 7 days a week. Wet. Make that game weak.
Yeah, you dealing with some wet. Bring a bucket and a mop. Put this wet. Give me everything you got. Put this wet. Beat it up, baby. Catch a charge. Extra large and extra hard. Put this cookie right in your face. Swipe your nose like a credit card. Hop on top, I wanna ride. I do a kegel, I'm kinda wild. Look at my mouth, look at my thighs. It's wet, it's wet, come take a dive. Tie me up like I'm surprised. That's role play, I wear disguise. I want you to park that Big Mac truck right in this little garage. Make me dream, make it stream. I don't public, make a scene. I don't cook, I don't clean, but let me tell you, I got this ring.
Gobble me, swallow me, drip down inside of me. Quick, jump out for you, let it get inside of me. I tell them where to put it, never tell them where I'm about to be. I run down on them before I have a night running me. Talk your shit, bite your lip. Ask for a call while you ride that dick. While you really ain't never got him for a thing. He already made his mind up before he came. Now get your boots, hang your coat for this wet. He bought a phone just for pictures of this wet. Pay my tuition just to kiss me on this wet. Now make it rain if you wanna see some wet.
Look, I need a hard hit, I need a deep. I need a Henny drink, I need a woo. Smoke, not a garden snake, I need a King Cobra with a hook in it, hope it lean over. He got some money, then that's where I'm headed. Cookie A1, just like his credit. He got a beard, well, I'm trying to wet it. I let him, now he diabetic. I don't wanna, I wanna, woo. I wanna stop. I want you to touch that. That swing in the back of my talking is fire. The sun is going and drying. It's coming outside, yeah. I run on that thing, the cars behind me. The way that I spit, and I heat trying to sign me.
Your Honor, I'm a freak. Handcuffs, leashes. Switch my wig, make him feel like he cheating. Put him on his knees, give him something to believe in. Never lost a fight, but I'm looking for a beat. In the food chain, I'm the one that eat you. If he ate my eye, he's a bottom feeder. Big D stand for big demeanor. I can make you bust before I ever meet you. If it don't hang, then he can't bang. You can't hurt my feelings, but I like pain. If he ill, me and ask who's is it when I ride the gear. I'ma spell my name.
Yeah, you dealing with some wet. Bring a bucket and a mop. Put this wet. Give me everything you got. Put this wet. Now from the top, make it drop. That's some wet. That's some wet. Now get a bucket and a mop. That's some wet. That's some wet. I'm talking wop. That's some wet. That's some wet. Macaroni in a pot. That's some wet.
Yes, we're back. It's another Tuesday evening, and you are listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3 FM. My name is Kim Dominique Ferguson, and I'm in studios with
Renee Jordan.
And on the air with us, we have Joanna Venti, who is a TikToker, a dancer, performer, comedian, wearing multiple hats in the performance genre. How are you doing today?
Doing excellent. I'm ecstatic to be here. Obviously, thank you for having me. And I just, I'm lost for words when you said, hey, we'd like to have you on the show. And I was like, all right. Here we are, and I've been looking forward to it ever since.
No, well, much like most of the people on TikTok, I joined last year, and you're Caribbean, and you post a lot of funny stuff, and then you also post dance videos, and you talk about yourself a lot, and I think you're an interesting personality. You're also doing talks with folks all over the world. You did I think you were the guest judge or guest host for a dance competition, giving away several thousand TT dollars. So, you know, you're doing a lot of things. And we at SoulP, we like to promote our Black folks, our Caribbean folks, our African folks. And I said, you know what? No brainer. Let's bring on Joanna and get to know her a little bit better.
I appreciate that so much.
No problem. So the first question I'd like to ask you is... what made you fall in love with dance? Because dance is a big part of your platform and what you're doing. So what made you fall in love with dance?
Well, technically, I started dance at 3. But I mean, that's when your parents put you in and you don't really know anything, right? And I was actually embarrassed at the time of like soca or anything Caribbean related, because I grew up in a Jewish community. So the culture is different. Mm. No hate there, just different. And they were always doing dance because they had money to do, you know, dance competitions. And I was like, I would love to do that. But I was only in like the recreation program. And of course, you have to choose sometimes between putting your kids in recreation and putting, you know, food on a plate. And I always loved dance. And my parents always danced. My brother always danced. Everybody was dancing around me. And that was something I always wanted to be deep down inside, was a dancer, but I didn't know how to achieve it. I mean, I'm a 3-year-old kid, you know, I didn't understand the concept of money. I just knew it was something we didn't have a lot of, and that you needed it to invest in it. So, you know, I would just, as I got older, just listen to music, vibe to it, and realize that that was kind of my gateway to having fun. And it was something about it that was therapeutic, but I didn't know quite what, because at that age, I was maybe 13 or 11, and I was into sports. So I was into like soccer, basketball, volleyball. But, you know, if a tune came on, I was always down to dance, and people knew that about me. Like, oh, Johanna's always the life of the party. And I just stuck with it. And I kind of knew, like, you know, maybe when I grow up, maybe when I reach 17, 18, and I get a job or something, I could start dancing and... you know, go to studios downtown or something, you know, like big girl stuff. So it wasn't until high school, actually, where a group of girls, they're Korean, and they were into K-pop, and I was into K-pop as well. And they were like, you know, let's get together and let's dance. And I was like, well, where are we gonna dance? There's no, you know, outlet really here. And they said, well, let's use open mic night. Let's be different. So I said, okay, let's be different. So there was 3 Korean girls and me, the Black Caribbean girl. And, you know, at the time I was learning Korean, so I was really like immersed in the culture and whatnot. And it kind of felt like a secret identity, because we would be training for months and watching videos on YouTube. And, you know, I would be doing my Korean lessons. So all of this is self-taught, by the way. And I would look forward to every December and every April, because people in the hallway, they knew me as, oh, Johanna the athlete, Johanna the person in band, but they didn't know me as Johanna the dancer. So I was like, you know what, this is my ticket into the dance world. And every show that we did, I felt amazing. I felt so empowered, like just to hear the cheering of the crowd and whatnot. And I was one of the few Black people in our school, so to be doing something so different and outside of, you know, my sports and stuff was it was fun. It was great. It was exciting. It was it made me feel like a superhero. And I wanted to take that further. And that's really when I fell in love with it, because I was like, you know what, I'm actually kind of good at this. And I like how it, you know, it makes me feel. And the other girls, for some reason, they didn't want to, you know, take it past high school. So I decided, you know what, let me see if I can make this a thing. So I took it into university, and I took courses during my undergrad in the dance department. My undergrad was in kinesiology, so by default, athletics and whatnot, but I wanted to really do something that was special. And I spent most of my time in the dance studio. And that's really when I fell in love with it, because my teacher saw that I had a special place for it. And I was there hours and hours, sometimes not even studying. I was just dancing and, you know, telling her, you know, I'm going to minor in dance and whatnot. And I wanted to, but minoring in dance was all these like boring courses that I didn't have any interest in. And
it wasn't real dancing. It was
no, it wasn't. It was like bootleg version. And I did a minor in dance, but I'm looking for like something that matches my energy. Like, yeah, I love the history, and I, you know, because, you know, Black people, here we are, like, we are the heart and soul and root of dance, like, when you look at it. And I love the history and I love the technique behind it, but I wanted something that was like, now that I could take and learn and add. I didn't want to have to sit down in another lecture. I was already doing lectures on lectures on lectures.
Yeah.
I wanted something now. And I just pushed for it. And I saw they were having auditions for the dance team. And we have two dance teams there at York University. We have the varsity dance team and we have the salsa dance team. And I didn't think I was good enough, because it kind of stemmed back to growing up in the Jewish community where the girls focused on jazz and contemporary, and I didn't have the fancy leaps. And I thought maybe it was just because lack of training or whatnot, and, you know, not having the money to fund. So I was kind of carrying around that insecurity, like, oh, you're not really a dancer, like, you're doing all sorts of other dances, but because you can't jump, you're not a dancer.
Yeah.
But, you know, I put that behind me and I was like, look, you put years into this when you look back at it. So I started it, I started training for it a little bit, like just doing stretches and whatnot. And I actually was approached by one of my classmates in one of the dance classes I was teaching, and she was like, look, I'm looking for a tutor. And I said, well, I can't do any of this fancy stuff. And she said, dance isn't about fancy leaps. That's one part of dance. Dance is about expressing yourself and showing, you know, your soul to the world and whatnot. And I, at that moment, like, something like the light bulb just like clicked. I was like, no, yeah. You're right. You're right. And she,
when did she get an opportunity to actually see you? Like, how did she know that you could lead her as a tutor?
Okay, so when I started with this obsession of dance in university, there were three class times and I was in the first one, but I loved it so much. I went for class two and class three, even though I had already learned the lesson in class one. And I kind of became like the unofficial TA or the unofficial tutor of that. And it was a ballroom class. And people started to know me. They're like, oh yeah, that's Johanna from, you know, the first class and whatever. But I became like a family and became like almost a second teacher. And because I can't necessarily pick up choreography fast, but I can teach you and I can show you how to get to things quickly. So people noticed that, and I would hold group sessions in the squash courts, and they would be like, we need more of this. And they would, you know, they would come and see me and they would ask me, and they would message me on Instagram, like, I need your help, girl, like, the exam is coming up, like, fix my arms or something. So that's how she saw me. And I didn't know who she was because there were so many people in the class, but I'm a friendly person. So, I mean, if you approach me and you tell me you saw me somewhere, I'm going to be like, hey, that was me. So that's how she saw me. And we developed this relationship and I was teaching her. And that really built my confidence, because I was saying, I don't necessarily have dance teacher experience, but this girl believed in me enough to message me and want me to be her tutor. You know what? Maybe there is something special. So when I made it on to the first dance team, I was so happy, because it was another, I would say, like, medal, I guess, in quotation marks, because you got that varsity red jacket, that sports jacket that university teams have.
Right.
And that kind of made my inner childhood scream of, like, excitement, because I was like, here is this little girl who's always wanted to be on the competitive side of dance and showcase herself, because I didn't see any other trainees or, you know, Caribbean folk in competitive dance, at least where I grew up with. So to come almost full circle and show my inner child that, hey, look, you did it. It took some time, it took years. It's a long journey, but I did it. And that's what made me fall in love with it. So when I got my injury, which I know we'll talk about later, that year of like, sorry, that like 10 years plus of building my dance is why dance is so special to me. And that's why I fell in love with it. And that's why I was so adamant on holding on to it.
And where are you based?
So I'm in Toronto. So I'm in the same area as York University. It's a town called North York.
Cool. It's a very, you have a very fascinating journey, and I love that, like, you went from kind of being self-conscious about it, and then you open yourself, you decided yourself, with a little bit of help from others, but you said, you know what, let me break this cycle of, like, okay, dance is not important. But why do you feel like you had to be, like, the Jewish girls? Like, why wasn't your dance, because you said you were embarrassed about soca and stuff like that, what made you feel embarrassed about your own culture and your own dance? What was it about it that made you feel embarrassed?
So when you're growing up in a community, and you're, so little background stories, my parents are darker skinned, and I am the lighter skin complexion. And for people who don't know, black comes in all shades, mm-hmm. but I look fair. And at the time I was extremely fair, so I could pass as one of the Jewish girls. So it was a nice feeling to feel included in a way that it wasn't necessarily, you know, right. And maybe the mindset of, you know, forget your roots, forget your history, but it's like, you just wanted to be included, because I saw
you wanted to fit in.
Yeah, I saw some of the way they treated the darker skin, like Indian classmates of mine, and you know, you're a kid, so you don't know anything different, but you just know you want to fit in.
You don't
want to
be treated badly.
Exactly. And I grew up with the lens that my parents gave me, which is a lens of a darker skin person. So to me, even though I was light skin, I had an outlook as a darker person, mm-hmm. Because they were trying to protect me and what they've experienced, but I didn't understand any of that. I mean, I'm 3 or 4,
right.
So when I saw that they started with me in the same dance, in the same recreation dance, but they excelled because they had money to support them, and you know, it's been something in their generational line of like, oh, you know, you guys go to dance, or you guys go to hockey, whatever it is. I was like, I want to go too. Like, hey, don't leave me behind.
Right.
And yeah, my parents would play some, you know, like soca music and tunes and whatnot. But when you're sitting at home and you're 4 and you're 3 and you see your parents are moving in a different way, like they're, you know, gyrating their hips and they're jumping up and down, and it's very different from what, you know, you're seeing in the studio of jazz that has been kind of reformed, where it's just like very I'm trying to describe it for the people listening. It's kind of like, I would say, tame in the way that they paint it. Mm-hmm. Doesn't necessarily mean that it's better, but that's what I wanted to do. And I noticed that the movements were weird, and I remember this one in comparison.
Mm-hmm.
This one time at it was a school function, we were 4 and we had to do the chicken dance, and the chicken dance involves you shaking your bum at one point, and I was on the verge of tears, because I was like, shaking my bum equals my culture equals it's very different, and I want to fit in, and people couldn't understand why I was so like anxiety ridden about it. And so it was sad looking back at it. When I look back at little pictures of me, and I'm like, here's this little Caribbean girl that didn't have anybody, you know, to look up to, where she was living in terms of like a Caribbean, like girl or male or whatever. So she felt the need that she needed to, you know, clip her wings and whatnot. And that unfortunately followed me all through my school years. I mean, I had an identity crisis after identity crisis. I was like, because I'm mixed Indian, mixed African, Caribbean, but you know, the mix. And so I was like, what am I? I'm too Indian to look typical, what features of somebody would think is like African black, or I'm too on the Indian side, I looked too African black, even though people don't understand that black doesn't necessarily mean, you know, that one specific set of features. There's so many people within the black community. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, well, you know what, to fit in, I either have to be of Jewish culture, or I have to be of Korean culture, something. So I dyed my hair blonde. I tried to look like them. That's why I picked up Korean. So I even picked up Russian at one point. I was like, I need to fit in. And a lot of that was because the boys there weren't interested in me. So I was like, let me be what they're interested in, which is a nice Jewish girl or a nice Korean girl. And I didn't want anything to do with Trinidad and Tobago, because it just felt so different, and I couldn't find somebody who loved me for me. So obviously I was searching from a broken place, and struggling at the same time, because when I was at home and my parents were dancing and celebrating, I was dancing and celebrating. But the moment I stepped out of the front door, I was a different person. And obviously they wouldn't know that that's what I was struggling with, because they're like, you know, you're in a good community and people love you and whatever.
Yeah, because a lot of people don't take into account that, yeah, while you may grow up with your parents, you actually spend 8 to 10 hours of your day with other people. Especially if you grow up in North America and Canada specifically, you're not necessarily, your influence, yes, they might be your parents to an extent, but like you might see your parents for like an hour or two before you're going to school. You know, you might have breakfast together and then you rush off to school and you spend 8 to 10 hours at school, and sometimes more if you have to stay after school for after school program, whatever. And depending on your community, and like how you said you were raised in a more of a Jewish community, you're going to be more exposed to that. So you're talking anywhere between 8 to 14, 15 hours of your day spent among people other than your culture. So this is quite fascinating to me to hear your story, because it's erasure of culture, but an erasure of your own culture in order to survive, because you want basic things. You want love, you want attention, you want to be able to fit in with your group of friends who don't have the same culture as you.
Exactly. And I'm the one that, you remember, they didn't think at first glance was Caribbean. They even thought I was Jewish, and I would hear the racist remarks. And the older I got, obviously I would understand when there was like racial tones and whatnot. And I almost felt like, wow, better erase, you know, the rest of my culture before they start talking about me in that way.
They were comfortable enough in front of you to say all of these racist remarks. What's going to happen when they find out who you really are?
Exactly. And that's what scared me, because my brother, he looks kind of like you, Kim. And I had to see firsthand the racism that he went through and the stuff people would say about him. And then he didn't have good grades in high school because he was dealing with his own traumas. And I understand that. So obviously, you know, some of the teachers painted him negatively, that stereotype. They wouldn't even take the time of day to see why he was behaving the way he was behaving. Mm-hmm. So when I got to that high school, I remember one teacher said to me, "Wait, you guys have the same last name. Was that your brother so-and-so? He's 9 years older than me." And I said, "Yeah." And they're like, "Oh, I would have never imagined." And I was like, "What the heck does that mean?"
Yeah.
Wow. Right? Like, never imagined because of my grades, or never imagined because I look in the same way? You know, little racial stereotypes there and whatnot. So it was a lot to unpack for like a 14-year-old.
Right. Just in case you're tuning in for the first time, we are speaking to Johanna Venti, who is a Trinidadian TikToker, influencer, comedian, actress, dancer, and dance instructor, who was born in St. Clair, Port of Spain, Trinidad and Tobago, and grew up in Toronto, Canada. We're talking to her about her journey as a dancer and as a young child experiencing racism, and how she's been unpacking that. We do have to take a few moments of break. Keep it locked. You are listening to Soul Perspectives here on KUT 90.3 FM. We're back. You are listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3 FM. My name is Kim Dominique Ferguson. I'm on the air with...
My name is Jordan.
And just in case you're tuning in for the first time, we have a special guest with us all the way from Toronto, Trinidadian TikToker, influencer, comedian, actress, dancer, and dance instructor, Ioana Venti. Ioana, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure. So before the break, we were talking about you growing up in a Jewish neighborhood and how it kind of, you were able to kind of pass as maybe a darker skinned Jewish person, or even just a Jewish person in general. And then you were exposed to, you know, the fact that they were actually like some Jewish folks were actually quite racist towards people of darker skin tones. And you said that your brother as well also experienced racism because he has darker skin and perhaps more African features, I believe.
Correct. Yes.
How has that shaped you, shaped how you view the world?
So no hate to my Jewish community. Just wanted to put that out there. It's just my personal experience. And
these are just the facts of what facts. You grew up with. Yeah.
Sorry, could you repeat the question?
How did this experience shape the way that you view the world?
Right. So I would say in the last maybe 2 years, so just before TikTok, claimed that I am a Trinidadian and I am a mixed girl of many nations and whatnot. Because thankfully to York University and to my boyfriend, he's Italian, white, I learned to love myself for who I am, because I was finally for once submersed in my community of Caribbean people. And it was very hard to fix a lot of those traumas. I mean, I remember rolling up to my first day of university and I was like, okay, taking that same mentality of having lived in that Jewish community and, you know, showing up with like how they would dress and whatnot, and even talking the way that they would talk. And I was like, all right, that's how you succeed in life. You have to be, you know, white. You have to act white. And, you know, growing up, people would say, you're not black. You don't act black. Oh, Johanna, it's not you. We don't mean you. And so I took that with me because I was like, well, I guess that's what you got to be successful.
Wow.
It wasn't honestly until my first semester had ended, the second semester, so this is 2013, where I didn't know at the time I had anxiety. I have generalized anxiety disorder. And I also have a ton of allergies. One of them is which is anaphylactic. Okay. So I was having an anxiety attack and I was with my sister. She's younger than me. She was 11 at the time. And I thought it was an EpiPen situation. And the person who I was with in the pharmacy was terrible. I mean, I was telling her my symptoms and she just kind of dismissed me. She was white. And I said, no, look, I don't know what's going on. I need help and I need you to, I know they can't inject the EpiPen, but I'm verbally consenting and my sister is there to hear you. So, I mean, you're fine. And it took her a while. And finally, when we got the EpiPen administered, I asked her, did you call 911? She said, no. And so, I mean, I'm sitting there as a young adult with these views of like, oh, I guess you got to be white to get ahead.
This is a pharmacist.
I'm like, I guess you got to be white to be appreciated. And, you know, and I'm taking all the stuff that I learned growing up and seeing it now. And I'm like, is it because I'm darker now? Like, what's this quote unquote treatment that's wearing off? Or they don't know me, so they're assuming, oh, here's another black person or whatever. And at the time, I didn't realize all that systemic racism. I mean, I haven't even entered that conversation as yet. But I got to the hospital and parents came hours later and whatnot. And it was scary. It was me and my little sister, but I had to put on the big sister face, and she's darker than me, a lot darker than me. And I didn't want them to mistreat her or anything. I said, mm-hmm. Yeah, I have an emergency right now, but this is traumatic for an 11-year-old. So I was looking out for her.
Yeah.
Especially after having been treated like that from the white pharmacist.
Yeah.
I was like, no, we're not doing this. So I, you know, went to the hospital, blah, blah, blah. And I followed up with my doctor who said, you know what, you have an anxiety disorder. And at the time I was like, what? I'm like, no, I'm just stressed from university. And he kind of took me back. He was like,
do you worry about things and whatnot? And then, you know, all that typical conversation.
Took you through
and
then, the steps of what steps, what an anxiety exactly. is. The and list, I rather.
I looked back in my childhood and I was like, I have never not been anxious. I have always been anxious. And that's because I've always wanted to fit in. So I was doing the most. I was going above and beyond. And my parents didn't know that. They just thought, oh, here's the one who likes to excel and work hard. But they didn't know why. Because I wanted to be up there with these people. And I wanted to, you know, I had to compensate for not having the money to learn skills. I had to, you know, do it the hard way.
Yeah.
So it really...
Your motivation was coming from a place of anxiety as opposed to a place of motivation of like, oh, these are my dreams, these are my goals. It was more of a, oh my God, if I don't fit in, I'm going to be an outcast.
That is exactly it. And I remember kind of feeling those feelings in high school, and I approached a teacher. She was Asian. It was a summer school teacher. And I asked her, I said, look, I'm kind of anxious when I write tests, math tests specifically, but I do well when I have more time. You know, how can I go about this? And she said, well, you need to have an actual diagnosis. I said, but look, I'm telling you my symptoms and I don't know how to start. And she dismissed me. And I remember this girl who's white. She had the same symptoms, got the treatment and excelled. And I was just sitting there going, what do I have to show? Like, is there something more I need to show? And so in the university, when I got that diagnosis, it kind of like solidified everything I had been going through. I wasn't imagining things. Yes, I'm a Black girl, and people didn't believe me because they said, oh, you know, you're supposed to be strong, right? You're the strong one and whatever. So it really, it took an effect on me. But like I said, it wasn't until I submerged myself and decided to stop, because York University is a commuter school. And by that, I mean, everybody, you know, takes a bus in and whatever. But for me, I would do that, exactly that, take a bus in and leave. I didn't want any part of anything because I was like, you know, this is going to be exactly like high school. This is going to be exactly like elementary school. I don't need that. But when I found my community in what's called like a college, which is basically like a mini section of the university, you're still a university student. I was like, whoa, other brown people go here, other Black people go here that are Caribbean, like specifically Caribbean or Asian Caribbean or whatever, white Caribbean, whatever you are. And I was like, wow, for the first time, I felt celebrated. I remember walking into the room and one guy who's Brazilian Portuguese, he was like, hey, the Trini Reach. And I was like, yeah, that's me. I was so excited. He's like, I love Trinidad and Tobago. Like, you guys are family. And then some other person said, yeah, I go to Carnival every year. And I was like, whoa, 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 whoa. What is this? And they're like treating me like a a goddess or something. I'm like, is this allowed? And I'm like, is this, you know, and I didn't know what to do with those feelings. And my boyfriend was very supportive. He was the one actually who introduced me to the college. He was like, look, you're going to love these people. They're going to love you. And my preconceived notions were they were going to be just like the community I grew up in. But he was like, no, 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 they're different. They're really going to love you for who you are. And that has been that, I would say, 3 years that I spent there. They enriched my life so much to the point where it took a while to get those traumas out. I mean, I would fight it. I'd have to erase a part of me that existed just to, you know, survive. And it took a lot to cut out what had shaped my views to start again, you know? And there was another person who was of Trinidadian descent, and it just felt like family. And I was like, so this is what it's supposed to feel like, especially because growing up here, my cousins aren't here. My cousins are back in Trinidad. Mm-hmm. And if we did go to a West Indian event, it was maybe once in a blue moon, family friend and whatever. So I never got that experience. And a lot of these experiences that I post on my content that are comedic and whatever, either one, I've made it up because I dreamt about, you know, whatever. And people are like, this is so accurate. I'm like, yeah, because I was an outsider. And, you know, this is how I envisioned it going. And for them to say, you know, this is accurate, I was like, whoa, like, this is awesome.
It's in your blood, it's in your bones. So even though you didn't necessarily experience it, you felt it. Yeah, man.
Exactly. So again, I have to say, shout out to York University. A lot of people like to, you know, pelt stones at it. You know, you go to York, you can hold a fork. But no, they really gave me the character development injection that I needed and my parents couldn't provide. Not that I'm blaming them. It's just different. It was, you know, they're Trinidadian immigrants here. And I am too, but I mean, I grew up here, so it's different.
Yeah.
But so shout out to York.
Do you think, looking back, that there's anything that could have been done during those formative years, during those elementary school years, to sort of make it easier for different cultures, different looks, different to exist within the same classroom, even if you were a minority amongst that population?
Yes, definitely. Like Black History Month, and just learning about Harriet Tubman, and everybody turning around looking at me like, oh, she's Black. All right, there's the one, you know, slave descendant. Like the stereotype things, and just condensing it to you're only important once a month, where it should be your whole existence is important.
Yeah, and 1 month per year. These
things. And shout out to my First Nations, Aboriginal, Indigenous folk who have gone through
far a worse.
Lot,
yeah.
Gone through a lot, and have also been, you know, marginalized and whatnot. And I don't know what the school system is like now. I'm hoping it's better, but it should be a constant where, you know, you have these celebration days and, you know, you celebrate other people's cultures and you're mindful that, you know, somebody's different. And even the teacher representation, I know it can be a club of like who they hire and how they want, you know. And a lot of people get asked, when was your first Black or dark skinned teacher, you know, and how were they treated and whatnot. So to have those people in the system as well is a big help. Again, it goes down to systemic stuff, but just to have lessons, maybe stop making social studies just about Canada, you know. Like I only in the last year, and I'm not ashamed to admit this because I didn't know Puerto Rico and like Dominican Republic were part of the Caribbean, because growing up part of the Caribbean literally was just Jamaica and like Cuba, right? So I was like, wait, you guys are part of the Caribbean? And they're like, yeah. And I'm like, oh, well, I'm already on a big platform. I don't want to like expose myself. But at the same time, it's like, I didn't know. Nobody told me. Yeah. Social studies was coloring like the same map of like freaking Canada over and over and over. Yeah. When it should be, you know, we're, as they like to say, we're multicultural and a mosaic and all that. Put those cultures in there, you know, talk about them. Let's have that space to, you know, to talk about it. So that's definitely what, if they're not already doing it, they should be doing. And I mean, this is a time of like the 90s and the early 2000s. So things were a lot hush hush and they were pretending, you know, certain issues didn't exist. But shout out to my mom, who is the one who put herself out there as the only Black PTA parent to represent and say that we, Black people have a chance, Black people are smart and whatnot. And just her presence being on that, you know, mom and dad council, I can't remember the exact name, whatever it is, was a huge thing. And looking back, it was like, oh, mom, I don't want you to be there on those, you know, sitting on those teacher meetings. But when I look back at it, I'm like, no, she did it for a reason. She did it so I and my siblings and any other Black kid coming after had representation of Black as good, not none of these underlying racialized tones and whatnot.
Well, just in case you're tuning in for the first time, we are speaking to Joanna Venti, who is an artist, a dancer, a Trinidadian TikToker, influencer, comedian, and dance instructor. Born in St. Clair, Port of Spain, Trinidad, and grew up in Toronto, Canada. We are going to take a quick break and come back to you. Keep it locked. You are listening to Soul Perspectives here on KUT 90.3 FM. Girl, you give me the tightest wall me ever get in my life. Mm-mm. Me hide them gems, me no care. Me take it anytime, anywhere. In the square, so me no fear. Long as a woman, I will be there. Me want a girl, me can't wipe on me. Me want a girl, me can't take care of me. Let me feel it, let me reveal it. Oh, me have to really squeeze it. Girl, me want for you all, yo. Put me arms right around, yo. Girl, you give me the tightest hold me ever get in my life. Girl, me just want to squeeze ya, put me things all around ya. Girl, you give me the tightest hold me ever get in my life. Hold on, like a fast bike on the road, boom, 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 boom. Girl, on the back and she a boom, 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 boom. Give me the maga one of the fat kum, kum, kum. When I play last one time, it come to kum, kum. Me out of control, I'm more fire, she want in her soul. She say more by more and still she grown. And still me multiply more, girl, me want fi just hold ya. Put me arms right around ya. Girl, you give me the tightest hold me ever get in my life.
Girl, me want fi just squeeze ya. Put me arms right around ya. Girl, you give me tightest hold me ever get in my life. Squeeze ya, around ya. Tightest hold me ever get in my life. Sweet little daddle day. Yeah. Try out, me no care. Me take it anytime, anywhere. Me not this fear, so me no fear. Long as a woman, I will be there. Me want a girl who take care of me. Me want a girl who can wait for me. Let me feel it, let me reveal it. Show me that you can turn. Girl, me want for you all, yo. Put me arms right around, yo. Girl, you give me tightest hold me ever get in my life. Y'all me just want to squeeze, yeah. Put me things all around, yeah. Girl, you give me the tightest hold me ever get in my life. Squeeze, yeah. Around, yeah. Tightest hold me ever get in my life. Love.
Vaccination against COVID-19 is ongoing throughout Quebec. The combined effect of two doses ensures better efficacy of the vaccine, reducing the risk of getting and transmitting the virus. You'll also stay protected for a longer period of time. Coming to your appointment for the second dose of the vaccine is a must, whatever else is on your schedule. The second dose of vaccine is essential. A message from the Gouvernement du Québec.
Get done, 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 done at work, come over. We just need to slow the motion. Don't get out of the way to no one. Long distance, I need you. When I see potential, I just gotta see it through. If you had a twin, I would still choose you. I don't wanna rush into it if it's too soon. But I know you need to get done, 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 done if you come over.
Sorry if I'm way less friendly. I got trying to end me off. Yeah. I spilled all my emotions tonight. I'm sorry. Rolling, 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 rolling. How many more shots until you're rolling? We just need a face to face. You could pick the time and the place. You'll spend some time away. Now you need to forward and give me all the work, 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 work.
It's me up in work, 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 work. You see me do my da-da-da-da-da-da. So me better work, 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 work. When you walk out, la-la-la-la-la-la. When the cat from my turtle.
Yes, 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 we're back, we're back, we're back. You are listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3 FM. My name is Kim Dominique Ferguson. I'm on the air with
Renee Jordan.
And we have on the air with us Joanna Venti, who is a dancer, just a multi-talented person who has an amazing story. But one of the things that people don't realize when they're watching a dance performance is just how dangerous dance can be. And you actually, in 2016, you ended up having an accident, and you ended up with a vestibular concussion. Tell us what happened and what you had to deal with.
Right. So it was just run-of-the-mill 3-hour, you know, dance practice. It was actually, I think, the competition season or something was coming up. So we were really practicing. And, you know, the pace got picked up because we wanted to get 2 routines in. And we thought, you know, to be different, or, well, it's not really different in the dance world, but to look different ways to put a different combination of fancy things in there. And they all knew I was a dancer beforehand. So they're like, you know, Johanna's really good at this. And, you know, they were encouraging me. And I was new to lifts as well, but it was just easier for me. And so we were practicing and everyone's having a good time. And shout out to them. They were my first real dance family. Like, everybody there loved them to death. They're amazing people. It was just one of those wrong timing things, and I don't hold anything against my partner. It just happened, and I don't blame him. It's a freak accident. Things like that happen. We were doing this 1,000 times perfectly. So basically what the move was is typically it's the female is the follower and the male is the lead, but you can do whatever you want.
This was a ballroom dance kind of choreography.
Ballroom dance, correct. So it was salsa, and what he had to do, mind you, I'm 5'4", and he was, I believe, 6 foot. So there's a little bit of a height difference, but that's okay, because he was strong, and that's what you need for somebody to do lifts. And obviously the girl or the follower has to be strong as well, because you have to hold on to him. He would kind of, like, fling me backwards, so I would kind of go up to go back down under his leg. So you needed a momentum, so I had to jump as well, but he had to hold me in so that my head doesn't hit the ground, because I'm going between his legs to do like a flip your body and come back up and out kind of thing. So we were doing it and we were fine, and we kept doing it because we were like, oh, this is awesome, this feels really cool and whatever. And just the choreographer came around and said, you know, you need to like tighten here, just like aesthetic things. And I don't know what happened. I just know that in the next second when we did it, I hit my head. And I was in shock because I was like, what just happened? Like, it was just a thud. And I was just on the ground. And I was fully awake and I was fine. And everybody else's reactions told me that I wasn't fine.
Right.
They're like, oh my gosh, are you okay? And whatever. I'm like, I'm fine. Like, I've hit my head thousands of times. I played varsity soccer. I mean, whatever.
Yeah.
I've done Muay Thai. It's no big deal. And they're like, no, are you fine? And I'm like, yeah, why? And they're like, they just looked at each other. Nobody would explain to me really what was going on.
Right.
And they're like, you know, sit up. And they got, I think they got me ice. I can't really remember, but I just remember sitting up and the room was dizzy. And I thought, well, you hit your head, but you will get dizzy and whatever. They were like, you know what, guys, let's call it a night. It's late. I mean, we practiced from 7 to 10 after a long day of school anyway. So we're like, no, we're just all tired. And I thought I was tired from exertion. So I was walking up the steps because the studios are in the basement. And my boyfriend picked me up just for safety because it was 10 p.m. and I didn't really want to take the bus. And I told him, like, I hit my head. And he laughed because he's like, okay, whatever. Because I could be a klutz sometimes.
Right, right.
I'm like, no, I hit my head and it really hurts. He's like, that's what happens when you hit your head. And I'm like, all right, well, I guess it's nothing bad. So the next morning I wake up and I felt like it was a ton of bricks on me. And the room was spinning.
and I felt nauseous. And I, as somebody who has a degree in health science and kinesiology, you think you would know the signs, but you don't know it until it happens to you. And I was like, well, yeah, last night's practice just wasn't it. And it was an ice storm outside. And my friend, we were supposed to visit our high school. And so I told her, I'm like, I'm not feeling well. I hit my head yesterday. She's like, let's go to the doctor. So we went. And we went to a walk-in clinic that I've never been to before. And the person saw me, the doctor saw me, and the doctor was like, you're fine. Because I was passing all the arm tests and the bound tests and whatever. But you have to take into mind that this is a dancer. You're testing. You're not, you know, testing the average. You're not
testing
person.
The average individual. Yeah.
Exactly. So I was like, but I don't feel fine. She's like, well, just take Tylenol, Advil, whatever, ice your head. So I said, okay, whatever. But I felt really, really unheard and skeptical as heck, because I was like, what do you mean? I'm not okay. But anyway, so my friend took me and we went to the high school, and I kid you not, I'm sitting down in the classroom and the clock is not moving. The air feels thick. The teacher is talking, but like, it was such a painful experience to hear every word come from her mouth. And I was just like, what's going on here? And I thought it was my anxiety. I was like, maybe I'm just overheating and whatever. And my brain felt like it was on fire. Where I hit was like the back left side. That was really hot, just behind my left ear. And so I was like, you know what, I need a Starbucks or something. I need something cold. So she took me to Starbucks and we were sitting down, and I was like, I need to call it a day. I think I'm just really exhausted. And she's like, cool. And so she dropped me home, and I took a Tylenol, and I was like, all right, I'll be fine. Fast forward to 2 weeks later, I'm slowing down when I'm walking. I can't pick up a textbook. I'm struggling to open a door. I can't walk 10 minutes across campus. I'm huffing and puffing to say words. And I'm like, no, something is not right. You just know when something is not right.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So I was like, all right, well, and the next.
So it took, mm-hmm. almost 15 days
mm-hmm.
of gradual degradation.
Exactly.
Wow.
Which is dangerous.
Yeah.
So I was like, all right, well, I have a function coming up. And I was on student council at that time. And I was also doing a swimming course to pass my undergrad. You had to do a swimming course. But I told my teacher I'm not feeling well. And she was like, that's fine. You did enough this semester. You passed. She was great. And so I went to the venue for this function that we had. And I was dressed up, and I was like, maybe I'm just anxious because I'm a student council person, and like, I have responsibility. But I like to dance, like I said earlier before. I'm the life of the party. Where do you ever hear Johanna not dancing at a function and Johanna wanting to leave a function because the sound was too much? You know, like, these are all not Johanna things. So I just remember the sound being so loud. It was nauseating. And I told somebody, I said, why is the music so loud? They're like, it's not loud. It's regular function music. Not soca fet loud, but, you know, like, yeah. Regular function music. And I was like, I can't do this. I need to sit out. And that night, at least thankfully, we had a hotel, so we wouldn't have to, you know, rush or stress and whatever. And I remember getting on the bed, and I was just sitting there exhausted. And I got up and I fell. Because I, you know, my brain shutting down. And I just remember the 2 seconds I was on the ground, I was like, I need to go to a doctor. But I didn't want to alert anybody. So I was like, you know what, just sleep it off. You'll be fine. So the next few days when I did go to the doctor, they're like, yeah, you look like you have a concussion. I was like, I look like I have a concussion. Did you guys, it was a different doctor I went to. And I let the doctor have it, but not because it was that doctor that did it to me, you know, mm-hmm. it was just because mm-hmm. I was like, are you guys for real? I went some 20 days and I could have died. Thank you for this. Like, thank you, healthcare. Thank you for, you know, listening to Black concerns and whatever. So doctor said, you know, take some time. And not one of the doctors I saw actually followed through. Like, they said, yeah, go to a concussion clinic. I was like, what the heck is that? Like, I didn't know what that was. I didn't know how to go about it. Mm-hmm. And I was like, is this something I have to pay for? I don't have the money for it. Mm-hmm. So I just remember after that, I was like, you know what? I'm just going to be at home. So it was the end of my fourth year. And it took 5 years to do my degree because I did specialize, but also because I would have needed anyways the extra time to finish it. But I just remember that May or whatever, April it was, and sitting down in my bed and having to turn off the lights and whatever. And I'm like, I don't know what's next for me. And having known what I was now diagnosed with, and it was just at that point a concussion. Nobody told me anything specific.
Right.
I was in a really dark place, because here you have an athlete and someone who's accustomed to, you know, being active and out there, going from 100 to zero. Like, I couldn't handle lights. I couldn't handle walking down the hallway. I couldn't handle eating or anything. And my parents saw it. And, you know, they were trying to be supportive because they were scared as well. And I remember when I told my mom that I was diagnosed with a concussion, she flipped out, you know, the old Lesbian flipping out at me. But and I could hear her behind the scenes saying, like, you know, like, you could have died, but like to like a relative, but like not to me.
Right.
Yeah. But she was worried. I mean, all of my family members were worried. And months I was in the dark and I just wasn't myself, and I was like, my friends are going ahead, my friends are graduating, my friends have cars and jobs, and what the heck, I have a bed to look up and stare at the ceiling, and I can't hear properly out of my left ear, my eyes hurt all the time. And I was on social media quite a bit and just kind of fueling that cycle of, you know, everybody's going ahead and not me. And things, I had things planned then. Like, I had, like, functions to go to. I had, you know, music videos to do or whatever. And I remembered messaging these people and being like, yeah, I'll be fine in 2 weeks. That's what concussions take. And 2 weeks came and I wasn't. And I just felt like I was letting everybody down. And shout out to everybody. The circle gets small, honestly, when you get injured.
Yeah.
Everybody in my small circle, shout out to them who stuck through it, even though I had personality changes and all of that, whatever, and the weight gain, all of that. And it wasn't until a chiropractor was entered into the scene, and it was like a discount thing on like Facebook because he was starting up his clinic or something. And my mom was like, let's go. It was originally for my parents to go, but they brought me as well. And this was, mind you, after spending money to try physiotherapy and, you know, stuff like that, changing diet and whatever and all that. So I was like, all right, here's my last, I guess, shot to try something. And I didn't know if it would work. And he adjusted my neck and I started crying. And everyone was looking at me like, are you okay? Like, because, you know, the risks of adjustment as well. And I was like, no, I'm more than okay. This is the first time in months that there's no pressure at the back of my neck. And this was a nauseating pressure every day I would have, where I would get it up and it was like an instant migraine. That was gone, completely gone.
Like,
and
instantaneously.
That's why I started crying, because it was like, this was a pressure that I could not get rid of for the life of me. And I was describing it to everybody, and, you know, and I was like, I was so relieved and I was emotional, because I was like, this is my first step to getting back to, you know, the person I was trying to be, or, you know, but there's a reason that you get knocked down. It's to build yourself up and you learn about yourself. So shout out to God for that. At the time, I didn't see it, but now looking back, I see it. And I learned
a lot. What is it that you learned about yourself during that time? What did that experience teach you?
It taught me to slow down, because I was going fast and I was going after some things for the wrong reason. I've always wanted to be in, like, what's it called, like, social media lights, because that's when influencers started. But the way I was going about it just wasn't it, and I was selling like a fake brand of myself. I wasn't my authentic self, and I could see, looking back, how quickly that would have been like the wrong path to go down. You know, like sketchy, like meetups and whatever, and who knows, there's trafficking in Canada, you know, it sounds good and whatever. And so things like that, really, it literally put me on my back to just think things out and spend time on myself and just, you know, reevaluate and be like, look, yeah, you want to be in the entertainment business and the health industry, but you need to do it in a way that promotes your authentic self, because it's your life at the end of the day, and you don't want to be doing something built on a fake foundation.
Yeah.
And I didn't know that now, fast forward, my having, you know, gone through this, and I still have problems. I'm still battling with the healthcare system, because they've kind of like, oh, you're fine now, in quotation marks. So, you know, we don't need to see about you. But it's like, yeah, I still have a hearing impairment. I still have brain problems. I still have undiagnosed mental health issues that need to be seen about. But you guys won't give me the time of day, and I don't have time to do it. But it made me an advocate for this stuff. There's tons of people I've met online now that are like, thank you for sharing your story, especially as a BIPOC person, Black Indigenous person of color, and especially as someone who's of Caribbean descent and is Caribbean, and just being vulnerable. And the people that, you know, I teach dance to are people who either they are of Caribbean descent and they've never learned, or they just love Caribbean culture, or they just wanted to learn how to dance and nobody gave them